Hello and welcome to another episode of the Tech Chicklets, where we talk about how technology intersects with your life to make it richer, easier, and more fun. This podcast is supported by Box.net. Box.net facilitates the way we work today, from collaborating with distant teams and external partners to accessing files from anywhere, anytime. Box.net, simple, powerful collaboration. You're joined by me, Liz, from 3brightstars.com, and Kim, EcoMom, from DiaperTheirFaces.com. And we do this podcast weekly, life events permitting, and you can listen to it from our homepage at techchicklist.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes, and you can vote for us on Podcast Alley. And if you love this podcast, please let your friends know. Word of mouth advertising is what keeps us going. So, Kim, I have to kind of laugh at that. We do this podcast weekly, life events permitting, because...
Because it's been 10 weeks.
So what's been happening then? What's going on with us?
You and I both have the best of intentions, and we have big intentions. Well, of course, I came back to Turkey.
Yep.
I returned to Turkey. I was in Canada. I spent a bit of time figuring out how to podcast from opposite sides of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Technology and time differences included in that.
From my point of view, it's mostly time differences. Like, it's just really hard to schedule.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're not...
Yeah, especially when we've got, like, the kid equation to contend with.
Yeah, because we both have the young ones. And you're in Turkey.
Yeah,
And so this is a challenge that we are going to overcome, Kim.
We are. So, like, when we do our recordings now, I am up a bit obscenely early, and you are up a little obscenely late so that we can get it done.
Yeah. And
hopefully our listeners will have a bit of sympathy for us if we sound not quite on, or, you know, like what some people might call, like, crazy or hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
It's because... We're dealing in extreme hours here.
Yeah. Okay, so story number one. Our first two stories are both about augmented reality, which I think is a pretty cool concept and something that a lot of tech stories seem to be connecting with augmented reality right now.
I find it fascinating stuff.
It's really interesting. So this first one is about a contact lens that takes note of the individual's health and sends data or warnings to an external device like a computer or maybe your iPhone, something like that. So it's a contact lens that sits on your eyeball and can tell certain, I guess, vital signs about you.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and it was reported by Wired.com. Wired.com reports that, quote, eventually more advanced versions of the lens could be used to provide a wealth of information such as virtual captions scrolling beneath every person or object you see. Significantly, it could also be used to monitor your own vital signs such as body temperature and blood glucose level. And
so, like, the virtual captions thing sounds so unbelievably science fiction to me.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, I'm having a hard time even conceptualizing it. Like, I'm sort of imagining myself in like the Terminator's role, you know, where, like, the camera would shoot to inside his, I don't know, optical lens or whatever, and you'd see, like, the little computer lines wiggling all around, and as he assessed different situations.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there's text and stuff. That's all I can imagine.
Yeah, I think that's definitely...
I don't know if I'm ready to live as a Terminator.
I think that's definitely... I'm ready for that. I think that's definitely what it's kind of would look like. You know, we've seen sort of illustrations of what that could look like in fiction, like the Iron Man. You know, when he puts the mask on and everywhere he looks, he's, you know, sees little graphical renderings of things with, you know, data about everything. That he wants to know about. And, you know, if we could have that and just stick it into our eyeball and get that. One of the things that the article was really stressing is a potential application of this technology is in gaming. And you could see people sort of walking around in the real world having, doing, I don't know how, you know, how the interaction would work, but having some kind of virtual game going on at the same time as you're just going through your real life. I think, you know, that
wild.
Just sounds really
I think it sounds really promising on the health front, though. I mean, if you're dealing with anyone who has health issues of significance, like, it could make their ability to move through life much easier. You know, if you've got someone with diabetes, for instance, because it says it could monitor vital signs, including things like blood glucose level.
Mm-hmm.
So if your little contact lens thingamabob, I don't know the technical term for it, if it can send alerts to your computer or your phone such that, you know, other people can help monitor your thing, because I know that some people with diabetes, once they're sort of into the danger zone, they're no longer able to recognize that there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they sometimes need someone else to step in and remind them to, you know, like, get some insulin or eat some food or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, you know, for people who are lower functioning, you know, illnesses like diabetes affect a lot of people with developmental disorders. It could be really, really helpful for I was going to say, like, it being a non-invasive way of helping to monitor them. I suppose the contact lens could be construed as invasive, but, you know, it's without needles, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could monitor blood glucose level that way instead of having to pinprick people repeatedly through the day.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds brilliant to me.
Yeah, well, I'm all for the practical application, but I definitely would like sign me up for the gaming component of it, because I'm really not, but I just think it would be so it would just be so cool. Like, I'd be all over, like, if I could, for example, if there was like a setting, I hate to bring up a theme that, you know, just seems to come up and up in my life, and that is the zombie theme. You know, if I could, like, visualize myself being attacked by zombies, like, in certain moments of my life where it would just, like, give me a boost of adrenaline, you know, or something that I knew. Like, for example, if you're falling asleep and all of a sudden, like, this thing could detect maybe that you're falling asleep, and then all of a sudden, like, a zombie attacks you, like, you'd be wide awake, right? Right?
Oh, God.
I think, like,
can
number.
Just imagine, like, paranoid college students across the globe trying desperately to pull those all-nighters.
Being attacked by whatever. It doesn't have to be a zombie, though, Kim. It could be like anything you can imagine.
International case of post-traumatic stress disorder.
You know, and we're just talking about the contact lens here, but, you know, I'm waiting for. I walk around the house a lot when I'm working and the kids are occupied and I'm working in the house, or I'm working on a certain project, you know, trying to get something done involving the kids but not involving me directly interacting with the kids. Say they're doing something else.
Right.
I've often got, or like I'm on a walk and so the kids are, you know, in the stroller, whatever. I've
right.
often got my iPhone on my arm, you know, one of those sports things where I've got the
right.
the iPhone on my arm, and I've got the wire like I sort of woven through my clothing so such that it won't catch on anything when I'm, you know, as I'm moving around. And so it's like it's going into my ears, and if somebody calls, I just click on the click button, and, you know, the phone call comes through. And this seems very very sort of cyborg to me, and I'm just like waiting for the model that I can actually just implant right into my arm, you know, or into my you know, into my shoulder or back or somewhere out of reach, you know, whatever. And,
yeah,
you know, with the contact lens and...
That one.
Pardon me?
I'd rather do the sports strap than have it implanted.
Yeah, well, the sports strap is a little inconvenient. It has its downsides to it. I could see the
it's
implant.
But really, it's like the difference between the push-up bra and breast implant.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'm not going to go under the knife.
You're right, yeah.
I'll
You're
let
right.
Lufthansa make money off of me, and I'll let, I don't know who it is that sells the sports straps for iPods, but they can make money off of me too.
I'd be concerned about upgrades and stuff too. Like, you don't want
to
implant something.
Yeah, like how often would you have to go under the knife?
Yeah, you want to make sure it's something that you can easily upgrade, because you'll always have to upgrade it somehow. Software
right.
upgrades wouldn't be hard, but the hardware upgrades would be hard. Anyway, that's
yes.
all sort of... By the by, there's another augmented reality story. Want to hear all about it?
I sure do.
It's pretty cool. It's actually out of Canada. It's out of Queen's University. In Ontario, Canada has developed a better than amateur robot that plays pool using a highly complex and technical system, which I'm not going to go into because I don't know anything about it, of cameras and calculators. So basically, it's this robot that can play pool better than you. So I guess, like...
See, the thing in my case is that almost every human can play poker than I can.
Yeah.
Anyways, look.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not the one for that robot to challenge.
No. No, I know. Maybe it could be a reasonable teacher, though, because it's got this interesting augmented reality component where, like, it'll do the calculation and show you using a system of lasers, you know, where the ball is likely to go if you hit the ball in a certain way. So I guess that's the augmented reality part that kind of you could connect it in with the contact lenses and wonder, you know, would it be possible for you to be able to, you know, while playing pool, have something in your eye that would, you know, tell you where the ball would go, and that would totally be cheating, right?
Well, I suppose it wouldn't be considered as cheating if everyone was doing it.
And also, I guess it would depend on what the software was like and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not so concerned about the cheating as I am just, I just think it's a neat idea. You know, you don't want to play pool with somebody wearing contacts or somebody, I guess that the technology wouldn't actually be in contacts yet. It would, first it'll be in glasses, you know, that people just wear. So there would be, people would feel like they shouldn't play pool with people who wear glasses and blah blah blah.
I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
No one wants to play with me until they actually saw how well, I'd say, how poorly I play, and then they'd be all over playing with me because they know they were guaranteed to win.
Right. Have you actually seen, like, did you go to the website and check this little robot out?
I have. I'm looking at it right now. And I have to say I love its name. I love that it's called Deep Green.
Yeah. And tell us about Deep Green. Why is it Deep Green? Show prep. I do bare minimum. That's what I've done. One thing that I will tell you, though, is that looking at the picture of this robot, like, this is the essence of my show prep here. I was disappointed to see, because, like, oh my god, I'm laughing at myself. I imagine, like, that they're building an android robot that, like, is,
yep,
you know...
I was disappointed with that as well, like... Human form? No, it's like a picture frame hanging over the pool table with a little appendage that can't really be called an arm because it's an appendage that sticks down. Yeah.
It does look...
It wouldn't be the same as playing against, like, you and I playing with each other in some formerly smoky pub somewhere.
That's right, because the non-android has a non-ass. It is not bending over. It is not, like, there's no, like, physical interaction with the the robot. There's no, like, potential.
It doesn't start to aim, you know, with decreasing accuracy as it increases its gear intake. Anything like that you have to really expect from your pool opponent.
Yeah, there's no date potential here. You know, you're not gonna get anywhere with this robot. It's not sexy. Although it does have a little bit of a sexy action in the rotation of the whatever device, the mechanics that it's a little bit gun like in the way that it kind of, like, if you see the video, there's a YouTube video demonstrating it, and it kind of is set to trance music, which you have to mute if you don't like trance music. And I guess this robot really digs the trance music. And anyway, it kind of swings the cue in a gun-like way that's looks like very competent, which I guess is a little bit sexy.
Competence is sexy, but not so much in an unhuman-like machine form.
Yeah, it needs to be able to bend at the hip, basically, is what we're asking for.
Or else they need to, like, put it in a nice sleeve of silicone and give it bunny ears, and then all of the women might get on board, right?
I think so, yeah. And then the other thing, it is very neat the way that it frames the balls very accurately. Like, it picks them up one at a time and places them, you know, in the triangle. But it does it very painstakingly, one at a time. They make a point of showing you, like, it's accurate, like it's perfectly accurate. Uh-huh. Like, that's obviously what the accomplishment is with this machine. But it definitely is not as efficient as just throwing them all in a frame and, you know, racking it up the way we do with two hands. So that's the other, I guess, argument that I'm going to put forward for using an Android robot is the frame up. It would be a lot more efficient that way. And if you want more information about that, like some more, say, scientific or accurate information about that, you can go to deepgreenrobot.org for more information about that. By the way, we'll be putting up all of our links, all of the links to these stories. We'll put them all up on our blog, which is techchicklets.com. So our next story about cursive handwriting. There's this story basically talking about how, and we've heard this before, how cursive handwriting is becoming extinct. And it's an Associated Press story, and basically it's saying that kids are not learning to sign their names, like to actually just sign their own names on a form, legibly enough.
Isn't that wild? Like, so most of these kids go to school, like, that does this mean that, like, cursive handwriting has disappeared from the curriculum?
Yeah, I remember, like, signing your own name was even a different lesson from just writing in general. I remember that being, you know, I remember in some grade there was, like, how to shake hands, you know? Like, you have to be able to, like, meet somebody and, like, act in a certain way that you can. And then another one was, like, how to sign your name because you're going to have to sign a check or sign a form or something, you know?
That's right. I recall there, like, being taught the notion of the signature. And how, like, the signature is not just one's name rendered in cursive, right?
It's sort of like your fingerprint.
Exactly. So does stuff like that just not get taught to kids anymore?
In this particular story, this eighth grader was asked to sign a form at home so that it could be taken into school. And when she signed it, like, very much like a, you know, I guess second or third grader, like just very, very childish, handwriting. And so that's when the mother sort of looked into it, and she just sort of said, I'm sorry, but we haven't had to use writing forever. I guess that they use, I mean, I understand the switch over to technology. And of course the Tech Chicklets are very much in favor of technology, you know, in what you can accomplish using technology,
but let's face it, like, the pencil is still a piece of technology.
Exactly.
It might not be cutting edge anymore, but it's still tech.
Exactly. And some of these really basic things, like fire and the wheel, like, we basically, like, we still need to be able to have some knowledge of how to generate these things, just in case, you know, there on the off chance somebody needs, for example, our signature. You know, it might be important.
And, I mean, it's more than, like, just in case we don't have access to technology. Like, if you can't negotiate a pencil or a pen, how are you going to negotiate your kitchen knife safely?
Yeah, I guess the argument, if I'm going to play devil's advocate, the argument to that would be you're going to cooking school, you know, and then you're not going to learn how to sign your name there either. You're going to learn, like, knife skills, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good thing. I just think I can see it being phased out. It just feels kind of inevitable to me. I'm very proud of my own signature. Like, ever since I sort of developed it, and it was taught like that in my back whenever whatever year that was, which isn't, come on guys, it's not all that long ago, you know. Like, no, it's not like we didn't have computers.
We recently entered our 30s.
Yeah.
We're not
aged, okay? We remember learning to write.
Exactly. You know?
And I remember,
well, my daughter is learning to write right now. She's learning to print at the moment, not cursive writing. And, you know, like, she recognizes letters and she uses the keyboard on the computer, but I think of them as two, like, totally distinct skills.
Yeah.
And I want her to be able to compose in multiple formats. So I want her to be able to compose on the computer, and I want her to be able to compose on paper,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know, with a handheld instrument, because, you know, regardless of technological advances, we don't always have access to computers and can't assume that we always will.
The fact is that sometimes you have to represent yourself in writing by writing on paper. And you cannot guess when that's going to be. But if you are writing when you're an adult and your writing looks like, you know, a grade 2 or a grade 4 level, you know, chicken scratch, that's reflecting badly on you no matter what your educational level is with, you know, involving technology. So, you know, it's just, and maybe that's the thing, Kim, you and I, we have to just teach our kids to write, you know, and just tell them, like, writing well is like dressing well, and, you know, you have to make sure that you at least know how to do it.
Absolutely, and it's about being able to present yourself to the world in a meaningful way, not just in a digital format.
Yeah, we agree on that, I'm glad, I wasn't sure. Okay, so there's a few quick little stories. We can never get away from Twitter because it's just become this, like, enormous thing that, you know, just story after story. So whatever, let's just mention it.
You love Twitter, don't
you? I do. Yeah, I like Twitter. It's just this thing that is so, it's just so little and yet so huge. And it just seems like so frivolous and yet it's got such a huge impact. You know what I mean? It's one of those stories that people don't, It's hard to see the value in it, and yet it's impossible to get away from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's still alive. It's thriving. And apparently it's worth $1 billion, although nobody can really figure out where that $1 billion is exactly.
How, there's no advertising involved with it, right?
Yeah. Like, how is it worth?
And no user fees. So how is it worth money?
How is it worth that much money? But you have a story about how it might be worth something.
Yes. So let me tell you my customer relations Twitter story, Liz, because you haven't heard it yet. Although I did tweet about it, but you didn't see my tweet.
I know a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah. So the story goes like this. There was a Fluvog shoe sale online that I wanted to get in on, but I'm in Turkey and I really didn't want to pay the shipping cost.
Okay, so hang on. For the non-shoe lover, explain what a Fluvog is.
A Fluvog is a particular brand of, like, delightful foot-friendly shoes. They're like, they're sex for your feet. They're amazing, but they're pretty pricey for the average stay-at-home mom. And the sale was enormous. Like, I got shoes for $39 a pair that were usually closer to $300 a pair.
Wow,
that's the realm of the sale, right? Like, making higher-end shoes available to people like me who are not so high-end.
Okay. You're high-end.
So a friend of mine told me about this sale, and I thought, like, woo, I love those shoes. I've tried them on in shoe stores. I've never bought any because I just don't spend that much money on shoes. I'm cheap. I buy my shoes at Goodwill. So I found a few pairs that I liked, and I got in touch with a friend of mine who is often here in Turkey, but was at that point in the States with her family and there for another month yet. So I thought, great, I will order some Fluvog shoes and I'll have them sent to her. And then when she comes to Turkey, she can bring them to me. And it seemed like a pretty good plan. So I put my order in and one of the pairs of shoes showed up to her pretty promptly, having come from Fluvog's Seattle store. But the other pair of shoes never appeared. And I sent emails, and I called, and, like, nobody ever answered the phone. I left messages. No one ever called back. No one responded to my emails. I got pretty frustrated. And then out of the blue, a week after my friend was back in Turkey, all of a sudden, two pairs of shoes, I'd only ordered one of this particular, they sent a duplicate pair for some reason, arrived at her in-law's place in Virginia, you know, a month late. And they didn't know that my friend was only supposed to be receiving one pair of shoes. So they forwarded on these two identical pairs of shoes to her in Turkey, and she brought them to me. And it turned out that they had indeed, like, duplicated my order, charged me twice for these two pairs of shoes. And I was kind of miffed about that because I only wanted one pair, not two identical pairs of shoes. So again, I emailed and called and nobody responded. So then I turned to Twitter to rant, and I complained that, you know, Flubug screwed up my shoe order and no one's returning my calls or emails. So like within an hour, I had an email from Mr. Flubug himself, who had been on Twitter and saw my tweet and, you know, used my username to track down my email address and found my order and apologized and gave me free shoes and refunded my money.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
I think that's amazing. I obviously have to wonder if it really was him or if it's kind of like, you know, he has like a few people who are allowed to use that his name, you know, to...
I imagine that's probably the case.
Yeah.
You know, that John Flubug doesn't sit in front of his computer scanning for tweets.
Still, I mean, or whatever it is, I'm sure that if his name is on it, then he must have direct, you know, say over whether that email goes out or not. I think that's really, really good. I really like the ability to get things like directly communicated through Twitter, you know, between the customer and the service provider or the maker, the producer. It happened as well, famously. I don't know if you heard about the Deuce Maytag thing. Did you?
Yeah,
you heard about that?
I followed that because I follow Deuce on Twitter.
Yeah, and that was you know, she gets called a bully and everything, but I think that basically she's a mom like us, and she was having a huge problem with Maytag, and she actually said, like, have you heard of Twitter, because I have a million followers and I will tweet about this, would that make any difference? And she sounded like she was kind of in tears when she was saying that, and they were like, yes, we've heard of Twitter, and like kind of rolling their eyes saying, you know, and no, it won't do anything. And then so she does it, and of course, you know, she promptly got some reaction, you know, from that. And and people are consider her a bully for doing that, but I really think that's the kind of direct reply that producers need, even, you know, from their customers.
That if it gives a lot more power to the customers too.
Yeah, and I think it empowers the provider, the business, you know, providing this, because, you know, if this was going on and Deuce was unhappy about it and she's kind of communicating this to her audience, but, you know, it's not getting out in Twitter or responded to, it's bad for their brand, you know, not to follow up and for there not to be a satisfactory, you know, result. I think it's good for everybody if there's clear communication, if possible, like directly from, I think that's really good. Directly from you to Mr. Flubug, and you get the better shoes. I like it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like in my case, traditional customer service channels hadn't worked for me, right?
Right.
I tried to, appearing in person in Chicago wasn't an option because I'm in Turkey, but you know, like the old tech of the telephone didn't work because my messages weren't returned, and the newer tech of email didn't work, but Twitter, which I wasn't even considering as a method, like I thought I was just at the point where all I could do was rant and be angry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, lo and behold,
I think the really
problem was solved, much to my satisfaction, and now I'll certainly get juice from them again, because I feel like, you know, they valued my custom, they were worried about my concerns and worried about the impact of my concerns on, you know, other potential customers. So I thought that was very forward thinking of them to be scanning as they were, and really good that they dealt with the issue.
I think a lot of businesses are being forward thinking that way and sort of trying to follow that model. I think it's you know, it's been a good thing, because now I'll probably buy from them, because, you know, you really get the feeling like if something goes wrong, like they'll fix it for sure. There's no risk then, you know, in buying online from them. And that's obviously what they wanted to accomplish with their big sale. So
exactly.
Mission accomplished.
Right. Rah, rah, rah. Yeah.
Well done. Hey, I got another question, though, about Twitter. Are we done with FluVog for now?
You bet that.
Okay, got a question, though, about spam followers, because, you know, when you're on Twitter and you're like you and me, what do you do about spam followers? Because we get lots of spam followers who are like, for example, like FunGirl80 of Dallas, Texas, who has the magnificent bosoms and loves meeting new people. you know, like I happened to notice, Kim, that she was like one of your most recent followers. My most recent follower.
Well, I like those bucks and bosoms, so I don't do that.
Well, my latest was PillowTalk4S4, who says, "Hi, cutie. I spend most of my time biking." She hasn't tweeted yet, but she follows over 700 people, so she must be really popular. So anyway, what do you do? You just leave them on?
I've not had trouble with getting lots of spam messages from them. And, it would take too much of my time to go through and delete them.
Yeah.
So if they're not a nuisance, I just leave them.
Yeah. I find them to be annoying because, you know, when you go in your contacts and then, you know, there's, like, your... I sort of, like, am proud of, you know, who my contacts are. And I kind of want to be able to, like, browse through them almost like a deck of cards, you know, or you know what I mean? Like, you kind of, like, collect people, like, these are my friends, and then these are just, like, the famous people that I show, like, a slight glimmering of interest in, and, oh, like, this is just some whore somewhere.
like your simple collection, and you've got favorites, and you don't want those cracked old tip symbols that, you know, somebody got for you to garage sale and they heard you collect symbols.
She doesn't even care that I'm not a man. You know, like, she's clearly not marketing to me. She's just like, anyway, and she's probably not even a woman. Oh, my God. I just, my response to that is, like, I delete them, but I always have this pang of, like, I'm losing a follower, you know, delete. Oh, God.
To be honest, I don't know what my follow ratio is. I don't get rid of anyone, I don't think. I don't follow a whole lot of people either, though. My following list is well under 100, because I just can't keep up otherwise.
Yeah, I can't either, and I find, like, every time I reduce, then somebody else comes to, like, really serious prominence on the, you know, on my screen, you know, on...
Right.
You know what I mean? And then that person's, like, the next person to go, so it's always, like, the most tweeting person is the one that gets that gets cut next.
Yeah, the person who tweets the most and the most irrelevantly, those are the folks that I drop.
Yeah, yeah. I don't tweet very often. My tweets are always, like, funny.
Yours are always funny, and that spouse of yours is, like, have me in stitches.
I'm laughing because I didn't expect you to agree that, you know, I'm just giving myself a shameless plug. I'm funny and I hardly ever tweet. You could follow me, guys. But I try to, like, always tweet something that I try to be considerate of the fact that people might be reading my tweets, and so I don't want to, you know, be annoying people if possible. You know what I mean?
I need to consider that more often. Like, sometimes when I get on my rant, there are a few too many tweets that come out, and, well,
no, yours have been fine.
Writing.
Yours have been fine. It's just that I often have the tendency to want to say, like, off to bed now, nighty night, my tweets, and I'm just thinking, oh my God, like, do you ever love hearing that from somebody? Like, somebody wishing you no. don't tweet it. Don't tweet it. There should be some kind of a thing that catches you at the end where you have to, like, answer a complex mathematical, you know, question before you can enter a tweet, you know, just to test to make sure that you thought that one through, you know.
Yeah, and that eliminates the problem of the drunken tweets as well.
Exactly. Okay, Twitter. We love you, Twitter. We can't get enough of you. Well, that we're kind of embarrassed about it.
Yeah, just a little.
Have you tried Bing.com?
I haven't tried Bing.com.
You haven't? It's kind of fun. Like, the fun thing about it, I don't know how the search is. It seems to have been pretty good every time I use it. It's the new alternative to Google. You know, that's the the Microsoft alternative to Google, Bing.com. And it's, of course, being hugely hyped, you know, as the, like, it's even, you know, it's got all kinds of advertising going for it right now. And anyway, it seems to be increasing its market share, which is presumably because of, like, partially because of the advertising. But I think it's also because it's just kind of cool when you land on it. It looks really pretty. The graphics are really neat. And they have little pictures that have little, I don't know if you're familiar with Flickr, but you can select a certain, like, you can draw little boxes and then, like, make notes. And that's what they do on Bing, is they have, like, a picture, and then if you sort of mouse over a certain part of the picture, there'll be, the search, you know, some interesting detail, like, it'll link to something on that picture. You see what I mean? So, I think that that's just such a kind of an obvious and a neat thing to do, that there's obviously going to be, it's kind of like stumble upon, in the sense that you don't know what you're getting, but it's always good. It's always right. Something a little interesting. And so I think, like, you might go to Bing and just sort of enjoy a little, like, it's a little different experience from just going to Google. And there might be a Google Doodle. Do you like the Google Doodles?
Yes, I do. I like those very much.
Yeah.
I get to find out things I would never know otherwise. Like, you know, there was some old, long-dead scientist's birthday. It wasn't Isaac Newton, but it was, you know.
Was it H.G. Wells?
No, but I did see H.G. Wells as well. That was a good
one. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm getting tired. I have one more story.
I'm sure you are.
I have one more story, and then I have to hit the sack because you know, my kids will be up again between, like, 4 and 5 tomorrow morning, and they do not let up. And Daniel today did not want to have his nap, and so we had an absolute, like, emotional collapse by about 4 o'clock again this afternoon, and it was just like, oh, it was not pleasant. It's a good time, so I better get to bed anyway. My last thing to sort of mention is Windows 7. Have you heard about this? Have you checked it out?
I haven't checked it out, but I have heard about it. I'm excited about Windows adopting the Macs features of usability. That sounds great to me. Because, you know, Macs are in certain ways more user friendly.
In quite a few ways. I know that there's differences in the way that the Mac processes as well, that makes it so that you can't directly compare, like, apples to apples, you know, in terms of how much memory it has and how much it can do at the same time. I guess you just can't make that direct a connection between an Apple and a Mac and a Windows machine. Anyway, yeah, I've tried it out. I've tried out a Mac. Jason's appalled. I've been trying out these, you know, huge screens where the processor is actually in, like, the computer's in the monitor. That's what I want out of the Windows machine. I want it to be, like, as good as the Mac, but, like, better. and I want no tower. And I think we'll be on the first rung to, like, good computers at that point.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, Jason's just hoping I can hold off on buying a Mac until the Windows 7 comes out, and then we can hopefully get a Windows 7 machine. And I'm encouraging anyone who's in the slightest bit interested in the Windows 7 to check out the link that we put on the blog, because there's a really cool tour, and it just will rev you up.
I'm going for it right now, looking at everything.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how incredibly overpriced it'll end up being here in Turkey, where tech stuff is always, like, at least 50% higher, usually more than double the price back in North America.
You're not going to be in Turkey for very much longer. We'll be back next week talking about tech making your life richer, easier, and more fun. Bye-bye.